Checkmate.
This is the Chestnut Checkers Podcast.
Checkmate.
Learn a new mindset to create wealth.
We need to be more independent thinkers, man.
Passive income.
Mathematics is precise.
A successful business.
Chess moves.
And money management strategies.
This is Chestnut Checkers.
So, hey guys, hope you're having a great night so far. Welcome to another episode of Strategy Sunday, where we're going to discuss some great plays we can do on the Biden win, right? So Biden won the election, as some of you guys know. So there's a different ways we're looking at this, right? There's a different ways, different things we can do, different things we can make money. Well, I'm just going to talk about the overall market. I mean, like, I got a question. Somebody just said that Biden hasn't won, right? So I don't know. I can't argue that, but I'll tell you this, that the market thinks Biden won. So the stock market right now thinks that Biden won. So we're going to assume that Biden's already won, right? So that's how we're going to talk tonight. We're just going to go ahead and assume that he's won. I know that there's some legal battles that could be up in the air, but the market has already assumed that Biden's won by certain stocks already going up, by the stock market futures being up. By certain stocks, they're pointing to a high open on Monday morning. So that leads you to assume that Biden's already won, right? So he won. So as far as we know, he's won. So let's move on, right? So let's talk a little bit about what to expect, because Biden is winning, how we can make some money come Monday and throughout the rest of the week and maybe throughout the rest of the year, and some ways that Biden could possibly stop some of the fire it's been in the market over the last year, right? Because anytime something happens, there's pros and cons, right? Pros and cons. We have to look at both sides, right? A lot of times people will only talk about the pro side of things because that gets you hyped. That gets you excited. That gets you, you know, ready to go. But if you don't manage risk and understand how risk works, we're going to talk about that a little later, you will fail, right? Risk is important, but it's not nothing to be afraid of, right? Risk is important. It's important to judge it. It's important to watch it. It's important to calculate it, but we don't fear it, right? That's an emotion. We stay away from emotion, right? So as you guys know, the stock futures are up 350 points right now, right? So that's pretty high, especially for the futures, right? That's abnormally high. I'm going to say now it's kind of high, right? It's not really, really high, but that's pretty high, right? For the futures, that means we may be up 300-400 in the market tomorrow, maybe 500, right? So that's pretty good. That means the market's pointing to a strong open on Monday morning. Now, people who have taken my momentum trading class, we know what to watch out for, right? Certain stocks, energy, cannabis, energy, cannabis stocks, healthcare stocks, those stocks are probably going to skyrocket on Monday morning, right? So we can use that momentum strategy. We can watch for gap ups. That means that for those of you who don't understand what a gap up is, it's simple. It means that whenever a stock closes one day, and let's say it closes at a dollar, and the next day it opens at $2, right? So there was no trading in between those two amounts. It closed on Friday at one or whatever day and opened at two. So that's called a gap up. That means that there was no trading between a large percentage of the closing price and the open price, right? They always point, a lot of times that will point to momentum going into that trading day. That doesn't mean that momentum is going to happen, because a lot of times a gap up will cause what's called a morning sell-off, right? So a lot of people will get that stock. They'll open up their phones or computers or whatever, and they'll see that they're up 100%, for example, and they're going to start selling. So it's important to watch those opens, right? Because a lot of people, especially beginners, will jump on a stock way too early. They'll get excited. They'll see the stock going up and they'll jump on it, right? But you have to be patient, you have to be disciplined, right? So let's talk about the opportunities that could present themselves on Monday morning, right? So let's talk a little bit about that. We talked about last week about certain stocks, energy, cannabis, healthcare, heading up, right? So, and a lot of people say, Armando, why didn't you set up your portfolio for a Biden win? Because it looked like it was going to happen. He was up 10 points. All the polls said he would win. Well, I got burned last time. Last time, and I've told some of the mentorship people there on one-to-one calls, I said, look, man, The last time I did that, over 4 years ago, I set up an entire portfolio, now a lot of my portfolio, towards Clinton stocks, right? That year I took a loss. That's one of the only years since I've been doing this that I took a loss for the year because of that. I woke up the next day, Trump was on, it was on TV with a check mark beside his face. The next morning, all those stocks went down. And I had to get out of all the positions. That was the one that, so that scared me. Right. That from then on, I said, from now on, I'm not going to do that no more. I'm going to wait till, because it's not really a big risk. Right. Because if you catch it afterwards, you still can get some of the the upward movement. Doing it before is more. I calculate the risk. And I said, look, I'm not doing that no more. I'm going to wait till after the results come in. And then I'll shift my stuff if I have to. But I'm not doing it. Hillary got me, man. Hillary got me, man. I woke up. I was like, what? I was like, oh, man, woke up in the morning. All my stocks were down. Right. Or, options. I had options, everything out. Right. But I said it to myself, I'm not doing that again. Right. So this time I'm going to react to what I see. Right. And like I said, I'm not afraid to say I took a loss because I think that's important for you guys to understand. I've been doing this for 15 years. I've been doing it for a while and made a lot of money, a lot of years. But some years I've done bad. Right. I've done bad sometimes. And it's OK to talk about that because I want you guys to understand it. A lot of times people who teach, who show you how to trade, they won't admit any loss. And then when some of you guys take losses, you say, man, what am I doing wrong? You know, this dude never takes a loss. The dude I'm watching on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, this dude ain't never taking a loss. How am I taking this? Because they just don't tell you. Right. So I think it's important to tell people who follow you and want to learn from you about your losses as well as your wins. Right. So let's continue to speak about the market come Monday morning, right? We know the cannabis stocks are going up. One of those stocks that I did buy back when Hillary was supposed to win. It was one called Tilray. I did a lot of research on it back then. Tilray is one of the biggest and the most sophisticated medical cannabis producers in the world, right? I bought that one. That's the one that, I did lose a little money on it over the next few months because I bought it because I thought Hillary was going to win, right? But I believe that Tilray is going to do very, very good in the short term, right? Because I think Tilray is well positioned to take advantage of a Democratic administration. I think they're going to do well, right? And another one is called Canopy Growth, right? Canopy Growth and Aurora Cannabis, right? That was up 56% on Friday. And I think that on Monday, it's going to continue that kind of growth, right? Because I trust Tilray. The other ones, I'm kind of, iffy about. But Aurora, because I wouldn't trust that. This is just me. You don't have to listen to me. You can do your own. I always encourage you guys to do your own research, to do your own, searching and make sure you make the right decisions. You can't listen to me. I'm just going to tell you. So ABACB is called Aurora Cannabis. I believe that's it. I may be wrong, but Aurora Cannabis, I don't know what the symbol is, but Aurora Cannabis is one that was up 56% on Friday. And I believe that's it, but I may not be right. But it was up 56%, right? So if that one more than likely is going to continue to go up on Monday, almost guaranteed, right? Because now over the weekend, we've confirmed a Biden win, which a cannabis company like that will be positioned to benefit off of that, right? So I'm strong. I think we're going to open up a gap up on Monday morning. That's a great, great stock to run some short-term call options on, right? Now, I think it's about $9. I hope I'm saying the right one, but I think it's about $9.30 something. But that one, I wouldn't really trust it long-term, to be honest, because I'll tell you this, and this is from experience, is that when stocks run up this high, eventually it's going to drop, right? It's going to drop. Stocks don't go up this high and never come down. Now, I've been telling people this for a year, is that I could be wrong, but whenever a stock goes up that fast, there's always a steep drop off. And a lot of people are shocked when it happens. Shocked. What? Well, I'm up 700% and it dropped? Yeah, it's going to drop. it's going to drop, man. I'm telling you. I would be careful with that one. That's what I'm saying. I would do short-term swing trading. I would do call options if I do decide to get in that one. And for the people who are in the Chestnut Checkers community, for the people who are in the mentorship program, you will get those signals or my trades when I actually do them in the chat room. So And we'll discuss it in the morning, you know, different calls or whatever. But back to what we were saying, right, is that Biden win is also good for one stock that, you know, I've been talking about for months, right? And a lot of you guys have listened. And Jay Foon just actually mentioned the stock. So NIO. NIO is in a position right now to grow ridiculously, right? We're talking about, it's a phrase in trading called 10 bagger, right? And that means a stock that has the ability to go up 10 times, right? This is very rare. It's like a unicorn when it comes to stocks, right? It doesn't happen that much, but I strongly feel like NIO is a 10 bagger stock, right? We're in early still. But a lot of people are going to come in. Remember, we talked about market cycles. We may be at the top of this cycle. So it may be a drop off and it may continue going up. But we don't know when. We don't know how it's going to go. We don't really know the time frame. But there's several reasons behind this, right? Because NIO is in one of the biggest economies in the world, China, right? China is poised to overtake the American economy, in 2025, which is only 5 years. That goes by fast. If you guys remember, 4 years ago, Trump was running for president. It seemed like it flew by. You know, with the pandemic and all this stuff, it flew by. So 4 years from now, China will be the biggest economy in the world. We will be second, right? It's going to change a lot of things, right? NIO is going to be one of the biggest EV companies in the world, the biggest in China, right? So it's going to be poised to do well. Another reason is that Democrats traditionally have been more favorable to China, right? But Biden is, you know, from what we've heard about Biden, he says he's going to be just as hard on China as Trump has been. But the opportunity here is that China, Trump has been extraordinarily hard on China, right? And for whatever reason, right or wrong, I'm not going to get into that. But Biden says he's going to be just as hard. But there's an opportunity for China to maybe restructure or renegotiate the relationship, right? So whenever there's some kind of opportunity, right, because we had a hard liner at first, now there's a slight opportunity that may benefit NIO. So that's going to cause NIO to go up here in the short term because we don't know. We had a hard liner against China. Well, we knew what that was. Now we have an opportunity. It may arise out of the Biden presidency. So now NIO will more than likely rise into the end of the year. I would say $60 before February. And I'll go on record as saying that. NIO will be at 60, probably faster, but I want to give myself time so I'm right. So before February, March of next year, we'll be at $60 in NIO. A lot of people will be shocked. A lot of people will be not understanding what's going on. A lot of people are going to start writing you then. Some of you guys have followed, some of you guys who have already invested in NIO. You're going to have all of your friends asking you about it, right? Maybe, and it's going to go to 60, 80, 100. Then everybody's going to be, oh, what? So people try to jump in late when it's too late. Those kind of people, as we get farther and farther in, that's what I call the wild money. Those people are panicking, right? And that's what makes stocks do corrections, because these people pile in at the end of the cycle and they panic on a little drop, which causes the drop farther. And they do what's called get washed out. Then the cycle starts again. But NIO is going to be an amazing stock. It's one of my stocks that I feel has the most potential in my portfolio right now to be what we call a 10 bag, right? So another thing is that Tesla will also benefit, right? But Tesla won't go up 10 times. Of course, it's already done that. NIO is a little bit farther away, you know, a little bit closer to the beginning of its growth cycles. So NIO will go up higher than Tesla, but Tesla's also going to benefit. Tesla's also going to do well because these democratic policies of new energy, green energy, are going to benefit both of those companies, right? So those companies both will probably rise into next week and maybe into the weekend, maybe for the rest of the month. I don't know. But we'll watch it. I don't think Tesla will be good for options because, you know, options on Tesla are kind of expensive. But you can do it if you want to. I think you would benefit more from an option on NIO. But I would wait for momentum, right? For those of you, I have the momentum trading class on Thursday this week. If you guys want to learn how to do that momentum trading strategy, which a lot of people make a lot of money, just sign up for my class, DM me or whatever, and I'll make sure you get that link. But that class teaches you how to pinpoint stocks as they're going up. And if you've taken that class, I want you to drop a review right now. But that class teaches you to pinpoint stocks as they are going up. And while they're going up, jump into it. get a little bit and get out before it's too late. Now it's a little bit more complicated than that. We have to do a lot of things. We have to watch certain things. We have to do, you know, watch the charts and things like that. But that's the gist of it, right? And that's what we do. And a lot of people are very, very successful, right? But that leads us to another point. And this is the reason why we can't let fear control us. We cannot let fear control us, because a lot of people have been sitting out of the market this year. A lot of people have been afraid. A lot of people have been scared. A lot of people have been a little bit antsy about jumping into this market, right? I get messages a lot. I get DMs. I get people commenting. I get people asking me all the time, I want to get into the market, but I'm scared. I don't know. I'm afraid, right? And they've been afraid all year. They've been afraid all year. Right now, this leads us to the point I've been trying to tell you for a year, right? Is that when Democrats get in office, especially somebody like Biden, the market is less volatile, which is good for markets. It's good for a market to be predictable and volatile, right? Democrats like that. They like to be predictable, volatile when it comes to the market. They don't like to, you know, manipulate the market. They like the market to run on its own. They like a market to be predictable, a traditional, right? Less volatile markets. Now, for those of you who trade options, you know what that means. Options benefit from volatility. That's how we make the most money when it comes to stocks. Volatility. Futures and options both work well with volatility. Now, the volatility is going to come out. It's not going to be like this no more. We may have a few more months and that's it. We may have a few more months of this kind of volatility. Once the market realizes Biden's in, it normalizes, we won't see this type of volatility going into next year, the year after, year after. That's it for options. You can still make money on options. You'll still be able to do good, but these 10, 20, 30 time returns are about over. Right. And that's what I've been trying to tell people for the whole year, is that you got to get into it now. You got to get into stuff while it's going on, because a lot of people made a lot of money this year on options, stocks, because of the volatility. Now, once that volatility drops, that's it. You'll still be able to make money, but then 10, 20, 30 time gains are gone. They're going to be rare, and they're going to be very, very rare to make those type of gains anymore. Well, people do that every day now, but it's coming to an end. I'm telling you that right now. So we can still make money in a market. That's not going to stop us making money. We're still going to do well. We're still going to find stocks we can use the momentum strategy on and still make money, but it's not going to be every other day like it is today. It's not going to be stocks going 50, 60% every day. The volatility is going to go down, right? And that's what's coming. And this is, you know, it's coming, and that's the end of it, right? And that's what I've been telling people. I said, look, man, you got to jump on stuff now. You can't sit and wait 3 months, 4 months. That's very, very important time, right? So last thing, right, is Bitcoin. Bitcoin's going to do extremely well because of a Biden president. Now, we look back 2017. Trump said basically he hates Bitcoin on Twitter. He says everything on Twitter, but he basically said, you know, he wrote it in 4 or 5 tweets. I don't remember what everything he said, but he basically said he hates Bitcoin, right? That caused a small drop, but it didn't really affect it that much. But it did drop the sentiment of Bitcoin, because we never knew if the government was going to do something about it. But Democrats do have a little bit more favorability, or I should say like leeway towards cryptocurrency, right? So we may see a Bitcoin, you know, rise here and pretty soon. And we saw it rise up to the president, you know, the election, because that market also predicted that Biden was going to win. So Bitcoin's been going up. You know, it was at 11,000 a few weeks ago. Now it's at 15, 16,000, right? I've been telling you guys for years to get in Bitcoin, but I really started talking about it in March when it was at 3,800. I saw it was an obvious opportunity. It's an obvious opportunity. Most people were afraid, didn't do it. Now we're up almost 450% since then. Back then, 350% since then. A lot of people listened. A lot of people made a lot of money, but that fear is stopping a lot of people from being successful, right? So the things that could kill the market, right? There's a few things out there. I'll tell you guys about this, you know, is that fear of taxes is still out there. Well, because Biden has promised to raise taxes, right? So what does that mean, right? That means that in a market where people made a lot of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, they may feel like, this is not guaranteed, but this is what I think, right? They may feel like, look, I'm going to sell my stocks in the end of the year so I lock in these this year's taxes, you know, because I don't know what Biden's going to do next year. I don't even know, you know, if Biden's going to change. I don't know. So I don't, they didn't want to lock this, these taxes in for this year, you know. So if they do that, the market's going to drop in December. You know, I don't know how much. I don't know how steep. I don't know how long. But I think it's going to start dropping in December because people are going to be like, you know, he may double the tax rate, you know. I would be afraid of that. You know, if you know, I would be afraid of that if I was, you know, if I had like, you know, stocks that, you know, I wasn't going to keep for like, you know, 5 years and stuff. And some of the stocks, like if I had stocks that I was only going to keep maybe to like, you know, if I needed, let's say this clip, if I needed the money and I wasn't going to keep a lot of these portfolio stocks for, four, you know, multi-years, I would be afraid. I would start selling. A lot of people are going to do that, right? People that need the money or people that want to lock in those tax rates may start selling, cause the market to crash. But the only reason it hasn't happened already, I mean, it's not going to happen to December because people are not going to sell now. But the way the taxes work is the House has to originate it, the Senate has to approve it, and the President has to sign off for it. So if the Senate is still Republican controlled, those taxes won't go. But we know that it's in limbo right now. It's almost like 50-50. I think they're still recounting the Georgia one. So if Georgia comes out a Democrat, that means that the Democrats have control and tax raises are definitely coming, right? And that's right. Bitcoin is going to continue to go up. And now there's a lot of reasons why Bitcoin is going to go up. And that's because of the monetary policy. You know, the interest rates are down at 2.2%, that's the mortgage rates. Our interest rate is near zero. So if that, the long as the money's cheap, that actually causes Bitcoin to go up because, if you guys know how it works, you guys know how the banking system works, you understand it. And I don't want to talk all about that tonight, but the way the banking system works basically is that the federal government, the way all money is created, people don't know this, all money is created through loans. That's how the government is able to create new money. So they have to loan somebody some money to be able to create money. So as they lower the interest rate, that means that more people ask for loans and they're able to put more money out into the economy. As less people, you know, as the interest rate goes up, that means there's less money they can put out there. So as long as they keep these interest rates, the money just keeps coming into the economy, flowing into it, it devalues the dollar. Over time, every year that the interest rates lower, the dollar is devaluing. So Bitcoin is a hedge against that. So as the dollar devalues, the Bitcoin and gold goes up. So we'll see. But I think Bitcoin will be a perfect hedge against that, right? So there's another stock that's out there that I forgot to talk about, right? It's called Peloton. You guys know what Peloton is. And I forgot to talk about that one. But let's talk a little bit about Peloton because I want to make sure you guys understand the potential there. Because I get a lot of questions. I put a post up over the weekend and I said Peloton was going to do extremely well over the Christmas holiday. People said, look, man, how is Peloton going to do well? All they got is a bike. People were confused at that, completely confused about that prediction, right? I got a few people saying I was crazy. You know, if you guys have followed me over a year, you know when I make these predictions. And I've been right so far, almost 100% this year. In options, I've been 90-92%, right? And I'm going to, at the end of the year, I'm going to calculate everything I said, and I'm going to give you guys real numbers how I've been right on a lot of things this year. And it hasn't been over, you know, since December of last year. You go scroll back on my time, and I've been consistently right. That's one reason why my Instagram following has grown so much, because people see that I am telling you, you know, from what I learned about in the past, I can kind of see what's happening in this particular market. I could be wrong next year, but in this market, I've been through a market like this twice before. So I can kind of see what's coming, right? So we'll see. Maybe it won't continue to the future. Maybe it will. We'll see. But back to what we're talking about, Peloton, right? I got a lot of people saying I was crazy. I don't know what I'm talking about. One dude put on there and said, I'm giving bad advice. And this is the same, you know, this is not new. It's the same thing people said about Zoom when I said it. That's the same thing people said about Zoom. You go back to, I talked about Zoom back in March of last year, of this year. I said, look, man, Zoom's going to go away. Oh, you're crazy. All the legal problems, whatever. And I went back, like I said, and I told each one of them people, where is it at now? You know, after it's up at 500, you know. But back to what I was saying is that Peloton, right? Now I can kind of see what's coming, right? And we talked about how the market works, right? We talked about that, that some people use what's called technical analysis. They read charts and try to predict where stocks are going. I do that sometimes. I mean, a lot of times, really, I do it sometimes. But and as it, you know, what charts are trying to understand? Chart, like, people get confused about what charts really are. Like, they got resistance, support. You put indicators in. What are you trying to gauge by reading charts? Simple. You're trying to gauge what people think about stocks, group psychology, right? So that's just an abstraction, or trying to quantitatively figure out what people are thinking about this stock at a given time. That's all you're trying to figure out with these numbers. All you're trying to figure out with the charts, the candle charts. You're trying to figure out what do people think about this stock? How much do they think it's worth? That's resistance. How much people think is the lowest it can go? That's support. What's the relative strength index? That's how much the average time, what people think, how strong that stock is. All these things are group psychology and sentiment, right? We're trying to abstract that with numbers and trying to, you know, make it quantitative so it's easy to understand. So the numbers are trying to figure out the psychology. The psychology is trying to figure out the underlying fundamentals of the company. And what the real question is about stocks, the only thing is, is this company valuable? And if it is, what is it worth per share? And that's at the top. The group psychology tries to figure it out. The charts try to figure out the group psychology. So that's what it is, right? So sometimes you can understand stocks from the bottom. You can read the charts and see stuff. Sometimes you can go up another level and you can understand trends or whatever, and you can understand. Sometimes you can understand from the company level. This company has this, or, you know, has so much earnings or whatever they're doing, is that's how they're going to grow. But with Peloton, it's like in the middle, right? I see what's coming. I see the group psychology. I see what's coming with Christmas. I understand how markets, how business works, right? So where is Peloton at today? Peloton has done some great things, right? And I'll tell you my experience with Peloton before we get into what Peloton's going to do here in the short term. The first time I ever saw Peloton bike, now I've heard it in passing, right? I heard it in passing, but I never saw one. And that's what made me first realize Peloton's strategy. So I'm in Austin. I had a speaking event down there. The government, the U.S. government of a minority business, flew me down there to speak at a minority event about cryptocurrency back in 2 years ago. So I flew down there and I was speaking at this event. It was in Austin, right? So they put me in a hotel. It was one of the nicest hotels in downtown Austin, right? So it was a really nice hotel. It was in a nice urban area. No, I say not a nice. It was like a gentrified urban area, but it was a very, very nice hotel. Very, very nice, you know. One of the nicest ones there. So I'm in there. And I'm going to the gym, right? And that's the first time I've ever seen a eucalyptus towel being chilled in a refrigerator. And I added that to my house after that. I saw a Peloton bike in there. And that was the first time I ever used a Peloton bike. I got on the bike, whatever, and rode it, and I had a lot of fun. So I went downstairs. Hey, man, what is this bike upstairs? You know, that's a Peloton. I said, that's a Peloton, old man, you know, whatever. I said, how'd you guys get that? Well, Peloton gave us a huge discount to get it in this hotel, and we get a subscription for free. And then I realized what Peloton was actually doing, which is a smart move. They predicted that this would become the future, right, that people would. These bikes that are these hardware bikes that are attached to electronics, TV screens and, you know, monitoring devices are going to come big. So what Peloton did is they got into the market early and they shifted to the premium side. Right. And we know how that works with business. Right. We know that certain businesses might sell the same product or service, but they're not competition. And I'll give you a good example. Starbucks doesn't compete with 7-Eleven coffee. Starbucks could easily. Make a 50-cent coffee and you drive through the line and give you 50. They don't want that customer, right? Starbucks have already taken the premium market for coffee. So they don't need the Dunkin' Donuts or the 7-Eleven coffee. They don't need them, right? They're not even going for them anymore. That's not their competition. Dunkin' Donuts is not Starbucks' competition. A Lamborghini is not a Honda's competition. They both sell cars, yeah, but they're not each other's competition. Peloton doesn't compete with these new bikes coming out. They were smart. They took the premium market already. So now these other companies are going to fill the mid market and the low market. But they're not competition no more, because anybody that's going to buy a Peloton bike is not even going to look at those other bikes. Because like me, I saw it now. I'm impressed with Peloton. Peloton has a brand name that's growing. Peloton put a lot of money into branding. They put a lot of money into that premium image, which was very, very smart from their part. So now they're going to take that premium market, which is a lot higher margins, right? And the thing about the Peloton business model, which we talked about this a few months ago. We talked about this a few months ago, is that that business model is brilliant. It's one of the, you know, it's a brilliant business, but it's going to pay off big eventually. Is that they sell you an expensive bike with high margins on time, but you got to pay it off over time, which is, you know, interest free, but you got to pay it, which is smart. It's smart. And then the bike don't work without the subscription. So you just pay for a $3,000 bike that you got to pay for the subscription for God knows how long. And you almost, anybody that invested that much money into a bike, and I'm probably going to get one too, is not going to stop the subscription. So you got them for years. So every time they sell a bike, they sold a bike and they sold a subscription. It's a double business model. It's almost a software business model, right? And that's a very smart model, man. And that's going to pay off big this Christmas. It's going to be huge, man, because everybody who's, Peloton did big good last Christmas, but this Christmas is going to be even better because everybody has started to think, man, I can't go to the gym. Corona may get worse. So they're going to start thinking, man, I got to get one of them Peloton bikes. I got to get something else. I got to get this. Something from Peloton. Peloton has other products too. And they're going to, people are going to buy those bikes and the subscriptions are going to start. All these people at once. Boom. All of them paying subscriptions. So don't you think that that's going to increase their earnings substantially on the next earnings call after that? Almost guaranteed. It's one of the things I see as one of the most obvious things out there. Now, we'll see. But I'm pretty sure that's what's going to happen. And when it happens, I'm going to go back. I'm going to write to those people who said I was crazy and say, where is it at now? Right? We'll see. But I strongly believe that's going to happen. Everybody's on lockdown worldwide. Peloton is already taking the premium market. They have subscriptions attached to the bikes, which is genius. You buy it, you got to keep paying for it. Now, how many, think about this, how many hardware products out there, you know, that have that kind of subscription model attached? That's very rare. That's very rare, man. Even laptops don't got that. You buy a laptop, I don't got to keep paying for it. I got to get internet, but that's not, like, if I buy an HP laptop, man, that's it. I don't pay HP anymore. What if they had the laptops locked down so you had to pay them, man? They would make a lot of money. And Peloton has that. Like, you can't use it with no other system. You got to use Peloton, as far as I know. It's a brilliant business model, man. But that's why I think that Peloton is going to do well here soon. Right? I'm pretty sure. Right? I'm not saying take what I'm saying and run with it, because some people do that. Now, I tell you guys not to do that, right? You got to use what I say and then, you know, do your own research and accomplish your own buying and selling decisions, right? So there's another stock out there. It's called Riot Blockchain, right? And we've talked about that a few times. We've talked about how Riot could possibly be another 10-bagger, right? It's 10-bagger, right? Because it's at $4 right now. We talked about Riot Blockchain being a... So we know, I'm gonna give you guys a very, very high level because I don't want to get into the specifics of how Bitcoin is created. I don't have enough time. And some of you guys may not understand it anyway. So Bitcoin basically has to be created, right? So they're created by what's called miners. So these miners run math operations. They're very expensive. They're just expensive computers that only specialize to do one thing, create Bitcoins. It's not 100% true, but this is a high level, right? So these companies will invest in hardware that creates Bitcoins. It's very, very difficult to create a block of Bitcoins, right? It takes a lot of computers at once, but this, you know, but just high level, that's what's going on, right? So these companies will invest in money. They'll put Bitcoin miners in big warehouses and they'll create Bitcoins, make money that way. So it cost them, let's say, $9,000 to make a Bitcoin. Before, Bitcoin was at $11,000. So they will make $2,000 profit on each one. These numbers may not be right, but I'm just giving you guys an example. So as Bitcoin price rises, they make more and more profit per Bitcoin. So if that happens, it means that the companies that are mining Bitcoin, like Riot Blockchain, do extraordinarily well as Bitcoin rises, right? So I think there's a good opportunity to make some long-term call options on that. and also bought a stock. I've done both. And I think that Riot Blockchain will be a eventually be a good deal, right? Yeah, I've heard they don't have that many employees, but I don't know if it's six. But they really don't need that many, to be honest, because most of the resources in the technology, you don't need that many people. Let's say, for example, you got, I don't know Riot's numbers, but I'm just saying from a technology standpoint, let's say you got a warehouse of $100 million worth of mining equipment. You may only need six people to run it. I mean, there's Google data warehouses only got 30 people in there, and it's a huge warehouse. You may not need, you don't need that many people. You just need people to run the, you know, operation, because these operations are almost automatic, right? You don't need a lot of people. So even if they had six people, that wouldn't like throw me off, because it would make sense. Keep the Twitter only had 13 employees for the first almost 10 years. You know, technology is not the same as most other businesses. Sometimes you can get away with a few very, very good employees. Like Steve Jobs said, he said that some software engineers are worth 100 times worth another one. You know, so some software engineers put out as much as 100 software engineers, 100 times more. So certain technology companies, you can have just very good employees, only have a few of them. So it doesn't concern me that they only have a few employees, but I still think it's going to be do very well here as Bitcoin goes up. Now, that's dependent on the price of Bitcoin, but as Bitcoin goes up, we'll see more. But all of this being talked, we talked a lot about the market, but I want to get into something else. I want to talk a little bit about money-making mindset, right? Because, you know, we talk to our mentorship people about this. We make sure we train not only their ability to find stocks, make money, you know, and find investment opportunities. We like to train your mind also. And I want to share some things with you guys, because a little bit about my history, a little bit about where I come from, where probably a lot of you guys come from too, is that I come from poverty. My father left when I was three. You know, my mom worked in factories. She raised us. She was a janitor at the college I went to when I went to college. And that's the reason I was able to get into college, because, you know, it's 50% off. So I was able to go to college, you know, cheaper. That with a Pell Grant, I was able to go to college, right? So I come from a family that's very, very risk averse. They didn't like risk, you know. And I'm sure a lot of you guys, especially if you come from poverty, know what I'm talking about. When you come from poverty, you can't take risk. You have to be afraid, because if you take a risk on something, you put some money in a stock or something, and it don't turn out right, you're not eating tonight. So you have to be more risk, what's called risk averse, afraid of risk. Well, you have to be like that, right? But as we move out of that, you know, after we move out of it, my mom used to have a saying, and you got to be from the South to understand this. I'm gonna break it down for you. She used to say, give me show money. she didn't want to risk, but I don't want that money. I want show money. That means sure money. That means she's not gonna put it in the market. She don't put it in nothing. She wants you to give her a check, and that's it, because she can't take those risks. Back in the day when I was a kid, and that's how I was growing. That's how I grew up. You know, don't take risk. Go get the check. Put it in the bank account. Don't even invest it. That's you know. So as I'm getting older, I get to college, I'm still like that, right? So I had to train my brain to be risk, or be able to view risk the right way. And most people are afraid of risk. If you hear the word risk, some people shut up. Risk? What are you talking about? People don't like risk. I love risk. You know why? Because without risk, there's no money to be made. You should actually run towards risk. Not crazy. You know, not the kind of risk where you jump off of, you know, bridges and stuff with a parachute on or whatever. But I'm talking about the right type of risk. Because if you can see the risk, most people are afraid of risk, which actually makes it easier for people who are able to judge the risk correctly to make money. Because most people, I would say the vast majority of people, are afraid of any type of risk. And I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to tell you a scenario right now. And some of you guys are going to, I want you guys, this is a thought experiment. So some of you guys can see how you may be afraid of risk too. And I want you to be honest with yourself. So let's talk about a scenario, right? Let's say you're walking down the street, and just think about it. This is not a scam. The guy is telling the truth. He's honest. You know, you've seen people win this game, and he's not a scammer. Now I want to make sure you said it. So this is a straight up honest game. You're walking down the street. A guy has a dice on a table. He says, look, man, you give me a $100 bill, I'll let you roll this dice. If it lands on one, I give you $1,000. Any other number, I'm going to take your money. Now, how many people would do that? How many people would do that? Now, if you say, I wouldn't take that, you're risk averse. You need to change your thinking. Now, if you really say, look, I would not do that. I would be afraid to put my $100 down because I'm most likely going to lose my money. Now, if you say that, you're risk averse, right? Remember, six sides to a die. You got a 1 in 6 chance of making $1,000, right? You got a 5 in 6 chance to lose your money. If you play that game 6 times, the most you can lose is 600, but you're going to win 1,000. So if you calculate the odds, it's a no-brainer to play that game. You should do it every single time. And people say, look, man, but with that particular instance, I'm going to lose my money. You're right. You'll probably lose your money, but we don't look at one instance of things. You got to train your brain so that every time something like that comes up, you do it. Every opportunity, you're looking at odds. Over the long run, it pays off. So if you ran across 6 opportunities where there was a 1 in 6 chance of you winning 10 times your money, maybe in that one dice chain, no, you're going to lose. You're going to lose your money. I promise you. More than likely, right? 5 out of 6. The dice aren't rigged. Now, I'm going to tell you, the dice are not rigged. It's a straight up game, right? So you put your money on the table, you're going to lose that money more than likely. But you got that one chance that's going to give you $1,000. Now, if you calculate the odds, it's a good risk, right? But you're probably going to lose your money on that particular time. But we're not looking at one instance. We're trying to change your brain so that every time you see that, you're willing to do it. Over the long period, it will pay off greatly to think like that, because you want to change your thinking. One instance don't matter, because you will lose money along the way. It's no way you're going to get rich, no way you're going to make a lot of money without losing some. But if you calculate the odds every single time, I promise you, you're going to come out ahead, way ahead, right? Way ahead. You have to take calculated risk. You got to take calculated. It's not gambling. That's not gambling, right? Because that's a calculated risk. That's not gambling. Gambling is betting on the bulls. We know how a dice turn. You roll a dice 100 times, it's gonna the more you roll it, the more likely that the odds even out, if you know math and statistics. That's not gambling no more. That's not gambling. That's pure numbers. That's a numbers game. That's pure statistics at that point. It's not gambling no more, right? So you have to train your mind to think like that. You have to train your mind to be like, you have to train your mind to look at every instance, calculate it in your head, and take those risks, because over the long run, you'll be better off. You'll make more money. Like one time, yeah, you're going to lose your money. You're going to put your money down on the table. Dude's going to roll the dice, will come up 3 or 4, and you're going to lose your money. Of course, more than likely, 5 out of 6 chance you're going to lose your money. But over time, if you think like that, every time, the risk is good for you. Take that risk. Over the long period, you will. Now, we've been trained to be risk averse. That's why the first thing you think of is, I'm going to lose my money. That's the first thing you think. I'm going to lose my money, because you've been trained to think like that. The first thing, the pain of losing the money is greater than the reward. The pain of losing that $100 overwhelms your logic, because logic says, is that it's a good, it's actually a good, I don't want to say bet, but a good strategy, right? And that's what you have to do. You have to think about every instance uniquely, but over the long term. And that's how you make money over time. Stocks are a gamble, to be honest. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. You're not 100% sure this stock's going to go up. You can't be, right? But if we apply that same thing in the stocks and options, we calculate the odds. We may lose one, but the other 5 will pay off for that one. We have to think like that. We have to use our logical mind and don't let that fear overwhelm us. The fear of losing money will overwhelm you to the point where you'll make irrational decisions. And that's what we want to do, right? And so people say, look, man, how did I, we go back to the story of when I was in college. I was not a risk taker. I was afraid. The first time I was in college, I was so afraid, man, afraid. I went up and I finally got the courage to talk to this this young lady that I liked, right? And I've never really talked to a lot of women like that. So I went up to her and I was shaking. That's how risk averse I was at a certain point in my life, right? I was shaking. I used to walk across the cafeteria my first year in college and I'd be shaking. I was very risk averse. I was scared, right? But I came out of that in college. Now, how was I able to do that, right? How was I able to change my mindset? Because I grew up being risk averse. I grew up being scared. I grew up people telling me constantly, never take risk. And my mom told me like that. It's not her fault because her way does work, right? And for a lot of people in poverty, that does work. Avoid risk at all costs. You won't starve. You're not going to be thrown in the street. You won't be. You'll be okay. But you won't live in abundance either. So that's a strategy that we use in poverty, which does work in poverty. But once we get a little bit out, we got to change our mindset because we have to start thinking in the abundance. We have to start looking towards abundance, right? And how did I get out of that? Well, one thing I did, right? I was around a certain type of people in the first year in college. The one thing I did that really changed me is I promised myself. I said, look, man, the second year in college, I said, look, man, I'm going to break down those friendships because everybody around me was afraid, too. We were a bunch of afraid people. I was hanging around with a lot of, I guess you call it computer nerds. We play. That's why I got this gaming chair. I'm still a gamer. But we used to we play games in the dorm room. We wouldn't come out. We were still a bunch of afraid people. The second year, I said, look, man, I'm going to hang around people that take risk. That's my goal for this year. I'm not hanging around those dudes no more. They're good people, and I had a great time with them, but I have to grow as a person. I can't be scared like this. I knew it was bad. I cannot be scared. Like, I won't be able to do anything in my life. So second year, I hung around risk takers, right? One dude in particular, I'm not going to say his name, but he's the dude that kind of changed me, right? He was an extreme risk taker. He was one of my best friends in college. Now, so I'm hanging around this dude the first year, and he would take extreme, for me, it was extreme risk. He went to Spain for what you call, for study abroad, flew to Mexico. He was doing crazy stuff. To me, it was crazy. But what I noticed is he actually had a good life. He had the best adventures. He had the best opportunities. He learned the most. He did. And after a while, I realized it's nothing to be afraid of. So I started mimicking that. And now I'm a risk taker. Right. And that's what you have to do. You have to break these relations of people that are around you that are basically reinforcing your risk of you being risk averse. You got to get away. You got to get around some risk takers, some people that will take those risks, people that will show you by example that it won't be that bad if it comes out wrong. And once you see that, you'll realize that it's not bad. I lose a little bit. I may get hurt. I may do this. It's not, but if you realize they're still kicking, they're still doing good, they're still prospering, right? Then you realize risk is not that bad. You just got to manage it. You just got to manage it. You have to mitigate it, manage it. But it's not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing because without risk, we couldn't make any money, right? So that's really how I did it, right? Then over the long time, I started calculating risk. I started being less risk averse. I put myself in front of people speaking so I would get over my fear of public speaking. So anything I had a fear of from that point, I started making sure I put myself into those situations so I wouldn't have fear any longer. So that's how you get out of it, right? First step is you got to get away from people who are risk averse because those people will constantly support you being risk averse, right? You may go tell your people, for example, you go to work, you tell everybody you're going to start your own business. Those people are going to tell you, what? How are you going to pay for health insurance? Oh, my God. What about, because those people are risk averse. That's why they all work in there, which is, it's okay to work somewhere. It's okay. Like I said, I don't believe in preaching to somebody saying you have to quit your job because I think you could be a good entrepreneur. You can make a lot of money and you can keep your 9-to-5. There's nothing wrong with that. But I'm just saying is you go to work and you tell everybody you're going to quit and start your own business. Those people will, I promise you. Those type of people, that they're more likely to be risk averse. So they're going to tell you all these reasons why you shouldn't do it. You know, of course. So you got to put yourself around people who are going to support you being more risky, right? Because you got to get around people that take risks. You got to get around people. If you're trading stocks, you got to get a few friends that are trading options also. You know, they know what they're talking about now. You can't be around people who don't know, you know, because that's bad too. Got to get around people that are taking risks. You got to get around people that are doing those things because they will pull you up with them.